Chapter 1. Beginning.
The evening of November 7th, 1948, was a mild one for Chicago. We did not need the warmth of our choir mantles or the hot glare of Dearborn Station, and our long enclosure veils felt suddenly thick and furry. It was 4 years since the youngest nun in the group of nine, setting out for Roswell, New Mexico, had seen the world. After the silence of our enclosure, the shouts and the clangor were deafening. We clung closely to the parents, aunts, and uncles who had driven us to the station. Then the Franciscan friars, who had come to see us off, began to take familiar shape out of the bright lights and the din, and we smiled gratefully for the sense of security their presence gave us. At the invitation of Archbishop Byrne of Santa Fe, we had been appointed to found a new monastery in Roswell. That meant one more tiny shoot springing out of the 700-year-old tree which St. Francis had planted in 1212 when he invested 18-year-old St. Clair with a gray habit, white cord, and black veil, and called her the first of my poor ladies. That night, the Order of Poor Clares was born. It is doubtful whether any of the porters rushing about Dearborn Station knew the life story of the woman whom the voice of God had declared would be a light illuminating all the world. The children of light walk heedless in the source of their light. The children of darkness know better. And when the hour of darkness is at hand in any country, the first act of the powers of evil is invariably to throw the switch. They tear down the cloisters. They turn the contemplatives out of their monasteries with loud speeches about the good of the state and about contributing to the social need. They are maliciously satisfied that they have in some fashion managed to deal the church a blow in her most tender spot. By a strange paradox, the persecutors of religion are always far more spiritual-minded than the common run of humanity. It is a perversion of spirituality, but it is a kind of spiritual vision nonetheless. One has to be very spiritual-minded to grasp the true meaning of the cloistered contemplative vocation. Like the Trappists and Carmelites, the Poor Clares form part of the contemplative vanguard of the church militant. They were not founded to care for the sick, or the orphans, or the aged, or to lecture to students. The order was instituted for the whole world, and every man, woman, and child in it, as servants of all. When Francis Bernardoni began to set Assisi on its ear with his conversion, Claire Ofreduccio caught the first faint rumor of God's will for her. Francis was the liveliest of Assisi's population. No one was more extravagant. No one sang with gladder abandon. No one laughed and danced and toasted his comrades with such irresistible charm. When this leader of the moneyed young set rode off in the name of high chivalry to take arms, the whole city cheered him. When he returned in a cloud of silence, they could not understand. God had spoken in the secret chambers of Francis's ardent soul. Francis had listened. Of all the saints, the world has taken none so completely to its heart as Saint Francis of Assisi. But Assisi, in 1210, was not ripe for a little poor man. When Francis found his songs again, they all told of God's love. When he regained his taste for comradeship, it was not to elaborate banquets that he invited his friends, but to a tryst with Lady Poverty. He became again a familiar figure in the streets of Assisi, but now he was barefoot and robed in a rough tunic belted with a rope. The small fry threw stones at him. The oldsters sneered. Only a few, like Claire, felt the breath of God upon the city and knew that Francis had not so much gone mad as become suddenly so completely sane that the city was terrified by his sanity. In Claire's heart, already pledged to God, but lacking as yet a sense of spiritual direction, a clarion suddenly sounded, and St. Francis recognized this beautiful, bejeweled girl of kindred spirit. He had made a wild prophecy one day at the ruined old church just outside Assisi. On a makeshift scaffold, he suddenly looked up at the blue skies and laughed for pure joy. Then he called out to the people, "Come and help me in the building of this monastery of San Damiano, for in time to come there will dwell therein ladies, by whose holy living the Lord will be glorified throughout his holy church." Of all Francis's seemingly extravagant statements, this one would seem eligible for the prize. Many still thought him insane. His father had disinherited him. The source of Francis's next meal was God's secret. Yet he sang out his graceful phrases about a community of nuns who would live in this tottering old building and fill the whole world with spiritual perfume. And no man ever looked less the part of a founder of an order of enclosed nuns than the laughing little singer. But in the winter of 1212, Claire came to him, and Francis knew what and whom he had met that day. Claire, in her rustling silks and ropes of pearls, with her golden hair, seemed the least likely of women to be a foundress in the manner of this exuberant young gypsy. But God knew just what he was doing. March of 1212 came, and Palm Sunday. Claire and her cousin stole off at night to the chapel of St. Mary of the Angels, where Francis and his friars awaited her. When he had invested St. Claire with a rough tunic and cord like his own, and had thrown a black veil over her cropped hair, he took her to the Benedictine convent of San Paolo. Claire had left everything in the world that night, and all she received in return was St. Francis's personal guarantee that as his daughter, she would always be entitled to nothing at all. It was enough for her. In such a way was the Order of Poor Clares born. There followed the aftermath of Clare's raging relatives riding upon the Benedictine convent, and of her family's redoubled fury when her younger sister Agnes sped after her, and was as calmly invested and veiled by St. Francis as though this were the customary way to conduct religious ceremonies. In all these painful episodes, Claire did not try to argue down her relatives. When her knightly uncles and cousins made a final attempt to seize her, she clung to the altar. When they did drag Agnes away, she knew it was time to ask for a miracle. She got it. The 16-year-old suddenly became so heavy that the six furious men could not move her. Uncle Monaldo lifted his arm to strike her, and the arm became paralyzed. Terrified, half out of their wits, they rode home at a wild gallop. When the dust had settled, St. Francis took Claire and Agnes to the church of San Damiano, which he and the friars had been making habitable for the young nuns. His extravagant prophecy was fulfilled. As for Claire, her first biographer says it all when he says, "And Claire came to the monastery of San Damiano, and there she put down the anchor of her soul." God himself said that St. Claire would be a light illuminating all the world. Our train pulled out of Chicago. Sister Paula began to lead the Litany of the Saints, the rest of us responding. When we came to Sancta Mater Clara, Ora Pro Nobis, Holy Mother St. Claire, pray for us, we all asked her to fill Roswell with the light of her love.